Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Andy Clef, and I am so excited to be joined today with none other than Tanner Witham. Did I get your last
Hello,
name?
everybody.
Tell me the correct family pronunciation.
You got it correct, Tanner Wortham.
Wortham, Wortham. So you and I met years ago through a shared interest and passion for leadership, high performance teaming, and what brought us together, I think it's going to show up today. You and I, we shared back in 20 mid 20s, 20 teens, 2016,
Yeah.
how ping pong balls of ideas bounced around our skulls, and it was like, I want to get them out. How about? And I think you made the offer first. Why don't we co-write a couple of blog articles?
Yeah,
And
absolutely. It was a long years
did
ago.
one on team building and empathy, and then we did another one on leadership. I'll put links into. I should have reread them in preparation for today. I wonder how they've held up. When's the last time you looked at them?
You know what? It's actually been a while. And I believe the one that I shared, oh man, and I haven't looked at it in so long, was the rider and elephant metaphor. I believe, right? I still use that one a lot. So I'm sort of hoping it's held up pretty well, seeing that I'm still referring to it.
All right, take a look, readers, listeners, viewers. Tell us what you think. 2016, so eight years. Wow. So anyway, no surprise. After that, you and I found ourselves roasting marshmallows around the Agile Uprising campfire, and have spent some time in Discord and set up a regular connection. And that's been
Yeah,
a lot of fun.
it has been.
We share a few other things. Just pre-show, discovered we have common ground in martial arts. There's also a bit of divergence. And I want to ask you to share your history of service to our country, where by the lottery of birth, we both found ourselves. Me 60 years ago. I'm not going to guess how many years ago you, but tell us a little bit about your service.
Yes. So I served in the Marine Corps from 95 until 2006 as a intelligence operative and martial arts instructor. Stationed in on both coasts, east and west. Spent several years stationed down in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. A few years at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, teaching intel that I used to do out in the field. So a lot of the missions I did in Cuba was around supporting SEAL teams and supporting the CIA, the NSA, FBI with a lot of missions that were occurring in that part of the world.
Thank you for that contribution and commitment and I suppose sacrifice.
It was a good time. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and I really feel in a lot of ways it propelled my career and set me up for the kinds of things I'm doing now.
Yeah, and that was the seed of, hey, we should get together and chat. You're working on I think a talk that you want to submit to Tri-County,
Triagile out here in
Tri-State.
the yeah, it's the Triangle, Research Triangle. I moved out just last year from California out to Raleigh, North Carolina, where we live now. And yeah, I'm looking at a talk. The talk is titled something like "What the Marine Corps Taught Me About Being an Agile Coach."
Well, let's keep that as a working title for today's chat and go improv and with a little bit of net of post-production if we need it.
That
So,
sounds good.
if you could give us the super high level bones of that talk, what are they?
Yeah, there's three threads, and the talk is all jumbled in my head, but I've since sort of found three threads in it. One of them is the power of mistakes. The second one is the power of three. And then the last one is the power of uncertainty. I feel like each one of those three are things that I've taken away from the Marine Corps that I have found ways to apply as an agile coach. And I don't quite know exactly what that looks like yet, but I know it shows up in my work all the time.
Interesting. So let's dive in. Let's take the first one, power of mistakes. Let's unpack that.
Yes, the power of mistakes. One of the I'll start with the Marine Corps story, and then we'll find our way back to agile coaching in a moment. One of the first things that I really started to get interested in around psychology and coaching was something that in the Marine Corps, what they call was the leadership reaction course. So they would wear you out, you would be tired as hell, and then they would put you in, you'd be in groups of about four or five, and you'd be running around all day with these people. And each one would take a turn being in charge of your group for the leadership reaction course. And the course itself was kind of like, ever seen Wipeout on TV? An old show. It's like that. You're gonna fall off. You're gonna fall in the water. It's inevitable.
Guaranteed.
And that was like the entertainment factor, right, of the show. Well, it was sort of the entertainment factor for the people who were grading us when we were doing these leadership reaction courses, these LRCs, was you're going to fail. You're going to fall in the water. They're giving you like some boards and some rope and some duct tape, and then you got to make it across these crazy obstacles to the other side. And it wasn't that they were watching you to see you succeed. They were watching you because inevitably you were going to fail, and they wanted to see how you as a leader reacted in those moments.
It reminds me of some of the other things I've read about. Anybody who's watched the Blue Angels or have looked at them, they have the after action debriefing. And it sounds like both of these are about developing that leadership mindset. You're not in the LRC. It's not the goal isn't to be the one across first because it's just not possible. The same thing with the Blue Angels after action debriefing. It creates that bond. It checks your ego at the door. Total honesty. There's nothing to hide, right? You're all covered in blood, sweat, and mud. And I guess the ultimate goal. And maybe the thread back to the power of mistakes is continuous learning. If you never fail, do you really ever learn? Do you ever stretch? So let's weave that together with leadership more in today's world of business agility, agile coaching. What do you see as strong
Well,
connections?
you know what you bring to mind too is there's I've mentored a lot of people over the years, and one of the first things I always try to explain to them is I'm not good at the things that we're going to talk about. I've just screwed it up a lot more than you. And so I get to tell you about all these ways that I've failed. And I know for me, I had a boss once. This was when I was a scrum master for a small, scrappy startup out in Silicon Valley. And whenever I would make mistakes and we'd be in a one-on-one and he and I would be talking, I would say, I failed. And that language was my trigger to go, I know this sucks. I know I don't like it. But now that I have said the words, I now need to take the mindset of there's something here for me to learn. There's a way for me to grow. And what was funny about that, and the reason that always sticks out to me, is he always sort of railed against me saying I failed. You know, no, don't say that. I'm like, no, I want to say that. That's good for me to say because I need to say it in order to not just glaze right over it. And I've worked for some amazing companies over the years. I worked for LinkedIn, I worked for Salesforce. And I remember one day when I walked into a room at LinkedIn and I looked around the room and I realized I was the dumbest person there. Not in a way that's terrible, but in a way that was humbling. And I realized that what I was bringing to these brilliant minds is this notion that I knew how to fail. And they were so successful. And they were so brilliant, and they came with all these advanced degrees from all over the world, but they didn't know what it was like to fail. And when they did, they often obfuscated right over it so they could get back to their success.
Failure with learning. I don't know who said it, but if you find yourself to be the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Kudos for that. Anything else about the power of mistakes that you want to explore?
I'll give a way that I found that I've enacted this, and this was actually a story about the same startup I used to work for. I used to hire Scrum Masters, And I remember when I would be interviewing them. I would, sit down for an hour over the phone. We'd talk. I'd ask them some questions about, tell me about a time when, and they could tell me about their experiences. And then I'd give them a hypothetical about what would you do if, and then if they did well at that phone screen, we'd bring them on site. And I would, based on what I know about them, I would sort of identify the team that I think that they would be working with if we hired them. And we would do like a mock planning and a mock retro with that team. And I would tell the team, I want you to amp up your personalities a little bit when we're doing this mock stuff. I don't want you to pretend to be something that you're not, but I really want you to amp up what you're good at and what your personality flaws might be. And I'm going to be in the room and I'm going to be a fly on the wall. And I just want to see how this person reacts to what you do in those moments. And it was almost my opportunity to take the things that they would say when they were talking on the phone with me. And then, in the same way that for the LRC, you're going to fail and they're going to be tired because they've been hanging out with us for a while, and then see what they actually do in those moments. So it was my opportunity to see what they did when they failed, because I wasn't really interested in how they succeeded. If they're talking to me and they're hanging out in our company, they're doing well for themselves. I wanted to see how they handled adversity and how they handled failure and how they showed up in those moments. And that was usually the indicators of whether I wanted to hire them or not, were those moments and what they did.
You ready to move on?
Let's do it.
Power of three.
Power of three is an interesting one. I wrote about this one on my own blog a few months ago, and I haven't seen many people talk about this. And I remember the first time I was talking about it myself, realizing not a lot of people have ever mentioned this. I was sitting down with John Cutler over lunch. Do you know John?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that dude. We realized once that his office, when he was working at Amplitude, which he doesn't work for anymore, was steps away from where I worked at LinkedIn. And so one day we're like, dude, I'm going to come up to San Francisco, because I usually worked out of San Jose. Come up to San Francisco, let's get together. And I was explaining to him the rule of three that the Marine Corps employs. And it's like this. So the smallest unit in the Marine Corps is a fire team. It has three members and a fire team leader. Each squad has three fire teams and a squad leader. Each platoon has three squads and a platoon leader. Each company has three platoons and a company commander. And what the Marine Corps does is it's building itself off this rule of three, with the idea that in times of crisis, you can only think of three things at once.
Before we go on to the three things at once, let's talk about human groups, right? So I'm reminded of the patterns that you just described, and they're as old as recorded history. You go back to the centurions, the Roman legions, the regiments, and I believe Dunbar looked at all this stuff and looked across all kinds of human societies, indigenous, Western European colonialist, and there were similar patterns in these numbers. His numbers are 315, not quite powers of three, 35, 150, 500, 150, and it's based on probably how many relationships we can manage at a good level without overload. Which brings to me to your focus on three things to avoid cognitive overload.
Well,
I
you know,
might
what's
argue.
interesting too is part of the reason that the Marine Corps does that is for the simplicity of it. That if you're a platoon commander, for example, and I believe, what is that, 40 people total, it doesn't want you, the Marine Corps doesn't say, I want you to think about 40 people. It's saying, I want you to think about your three squads. And by conceptualizing the world in those three, the next time you get promoted to, a company commander, you're still thinking in three, and you can still apply that so you don't get buried in all the noise. That's not to say when one of your 40 Marines come to you and want to have a conversation, you don't. But
Right.
when you're on the battlefield, you want to think about your three moving parts and how you're using them, not the 40 moving parts and how you're using them.
So let's bring that back to the world of Scrum Mastery, Agile coaching, leadership. What are the containers of those three things in that context?
I have an answer to this, but I feel like it falls a little bit more into the bucket of the uncertainty. So I don't want to ruin the surprise yet.
Okay, so
But
let
I
me take a
think there's
shot at
something
it.
to be said here around this notion of like sprint goals and the amount of stuff in your backlog and the amount of things that are all important all at once. Or like a quote that I saw the other day was, when you don't know what's unnecessary, you don't know what's necessary.
I like it. And if we take a look at a team that is working or attempting to work within Scrum, sprint goals, no more than three things. Think about the product backlog, no more than three sprints worth. Otherwise, it's wasteful. Go to teams of teams, epics. How many of us have tried to support a value stream of multiple teams, more than three, and at whatever planning time, it's like, okay, so what do you got? What are the three features? Oh, no. We have 100 features. And then scale it to the next level about OKRs, or what are your pillars? I was looking at something recently where an organization was very proud about the pillars of customer experience that they were building. 23. Our 23 CX principles are, and my thought was, wow, that's quite a cognitive load for anybody to absorb to think about the journey. So the power of
Well, and
that.
I'll give you another one too. I mean, this falls into both of our spaces because we both love data. Is how many times have we seen organizations that just overwhelm themselves with the number of things that they're measuring or looking at? And you kind of forget about which ones are the important ones when you're looking at 20 of them.
Does that link up to the topic you wanted to unpack next, the power of uncertainty? Because
Not
I
quite,
think,
not quite. But I tell you what, before we move on, there is something
yeah.
that I know that I do that is in relation to top three. And it's I think it's a great tip. I have what I call my weekly top three, where at the end of every week, I write down my top three accomplishments. And that way, whenever I lose sight of how well I'm doing, or whenever I want to have a pity party, or if you work in an organization where you've got to put together your own performance reviews, I can go back and look at all those things. And there, yeah, I know. And it's always private. I never let anybody look at it because there will be some weeks where I'll just go, this was just a crappy week and I didn't get anything done. And I don't even have three things. That's just the only thing I write. And that's been one of my ways to use the power of three. Another one, which isn't really related to three, but is related to overload, is what I call a meeting cap. Depending on the role, depending on the organization I was in, everybody's going to have a different number. But I would figure out what is the sweet spot for the number of hours I should be spending in meetings, and then the number of hours I should have free time. Let's just say that that number is 4 hours a day. What I would then do is once I saw a meeting would get 4 hours of meetings, I would then block out that day, which then absolved me of the guilt of having to say no when someone booked me, because when they booked me, they knew I wasn't available. So that if they really needed me, I could talk to them. Maybe I go to their meeting and maybe I move another meeting out, or maybe I have an exception. But that's been one of the ways I know for myself I've managed overload and had control of my own calendar.
Could you fix my calendar? What is your rate? It's gotten increasingly difficult, and from personal and observational experience, particularly when we've gone hybrid or fully remote, the need to collaborate, communicate, etc., connect, and still have flow. Is a challenge many of us haven't quite succeeded. I love David Marquez's approach to red time, blue time, where you sit down and like, great, we're going to schedule some time. Technically, it's a meeting because it's on our calendars. Is this red time, i.e., reduce uncertainty, reduce variability? I call it my GSD session. Are we here to get shit done? And what is that? What is the list that we need to get done? Or is it blue time, blue sky, blue ocean? Embrace variability so that when we get back to red time, all that uncertainty, no, not all of it, a portion of that has been distilled to here's the next actions we need to take. Let's take them.
Yes.
And then we go
Yes.
back. And so it's back and forth and back and
Yeah.
forth.
Yeah, and I'll give you one other thing too. I love that. It is Martin's book, and I can't remember Martin's last name, but the name of the book is Driving Value with Sprint Goals. He's got this notion in the book where he talks about sprint goals of the two kinds of planning. I think he calls them like anaconda planning and hummingbird planning. The anaconda planning is the one where you bite off everything and you fill up your whole sprint, and then there's room for nothing else. So if you want to do more, you either overload the sprint or you have to take something out and put something else in. And then you define your sprint goals with the anaconda approach. The other one is, and the hummingbird one, which is the one he prefers. Also, I'll say about the anaconda is that's also call that Tetris, where you're just trying to, fill in all the boxes so it looks full, which is a fun game to play, but isn't so fun in the workplace. But the hummingbird planning, I think, is the better one, where you know what your sprint goal is, you know what's important, you bring in some amount of work that you know is towards that sprint goal, and then through the course of the sprint, you add more stuff in. And some people would say, oh my God, don't do that because you're not supposed to bring work in mid-sprint. But the difference here is you're saying that the sprint goal is what matters for the sprint, not the all the work that you put in the backlog is what matters for the sprint.
Yeah, I want to make a plug for a few other pods that we have in the archive. It is combining Kanban thoughts with Scrum constraints and embracing a desire for the power of flow over hitting some arbitrary target that we made when we knew the least, i.e.
Well, you know what
it
you're
can
talking about there too, a little bit, is maker versus manager time. Have you heard about that concept before?
It's I can understand what it means. It would give us the 30
Yeah,
second
it's
Lipperman
almost like
model.
flow. And in other words, maker time is I need to sit down, I need to get in this headspace, it'll take me 20 minutes before I'm able to actually be productive. Manager time is this idea of I need an answer to a question. I'm not really building anything, but I'm managing the building of things. And they're always, in contradiction with one another because managers want information immediately. Makers want to be left alone so they can make.
Yes, and in this remote first world, it's really become a challenge. I remember in the office, the makers began to put up defenses. They started with headphones, right? And that didn't work when you got a shoulder tap from the manager. Like, could you tell me the status? I'm like, fuck, 3 hours just went out of my head. I had a colleague, shout out to you, Frank, who got the Harry Potter jelly beans. Remember that were odd flavors, like
Terrible flavors. Some of them terrible.
serum terrible. He had a bowl on his table, and anytime he was in maker time and somebody was in manager time and broke his stride, he'd say, "Take one." And they're like, "What are you talking about? Take one." And they'd be like, "Oh man, that tastes like shit." And they're like, "Yeah, that's the flavor. Now, how can I help you?" And they're like, "What was that all
That
about?
is brilliant. I absolutely love that.
You just cost me, pull a number, 20% of my flow." And now, if you look at Slack, remember when HipChat came out and everybody's like, "I love it." Oh shit, I
I
hate
do.
it. And now it's Slack, and I have a personal vendetta to get rid of private DMs versus public. Even it could be the concept, it could be a private but group space where everybody needs to know is in there, as opposed to I DM you, you DM Mary, Mary DMs Jeff, and then I get ask you, did you know, blah blah blah. And 47 interruptions later, three people have broken their flow of maker time because I prioritize manager time over anything else.
Yes. However,
Meeting.
I will push back against at least some of that. It's the same thing with like meetings that we were talking about. People feel like they don't have control over their time. They do. It's just hard. In the same way that before I sit down with any of my clients. Like right now, LinkedIn is closed, Facebook is closed, my phone is on airplane mode. The only thing I have is me and you. And I do that when I go into my own maker time, is I shut everything off. And that way nobody can find me. And when I'm at home, except my wife can find me. But nobody can find me. And it works because I control that.
And that's a powerful discipline, and it relies on working agreements, right? And automatic messaging, and all of our applications have it. I love the, I'm in a 20-minute Pomodoro. The longest you're going to have to wait before I respond
Yes.
is 20 minutes. And I may be 2 minutes or 18 minutes away. Stop. Don't email me to find out if I got your Slack, etc. 20 minutes. Can you wait 20 minutes? If the place is on fire, by all means. But how often is that the case? All right, so we took a little side trail down there. It was fun. Bring us back. Are we up to the third power?
We are. We are. The power of uncertainty. And actually, there's a nice synergy between the power of three and the power of uncertainty, at least in the context of the Marine Corps. I talked about how the Marine Corps itself is built up from powers of three, where you have this huge upside down, I'll call it a pyramid. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But then you got to find a way to get that information back down. And how the Marine Corps chooses to do that in a way that sort of embraces the uncertainty is through what's called a five paragraph order. And we don't need to talk about everything for the five paragraph order, but there are three things that it really elaborates on. Number one is, why is it important? What's important? And who's important? So again, why is it important? What's important and who's important? And what happens with that five paragraph order is it starts at the top and it works its way all the way down, and each leader of the organization is dissecting it. Now, let me give you an example of what that looks like. You have the platoon leader goes, all right, here's commander's intent. Here's the why. Here's why two levels above me or one level above me, this is a thing that has to get accomplished. Now I'm going to tell you what. First squad, here's your mission. Second squad, here's your mission. Third squad, here's your mission. And now I'm going to tell you who. First squad, you are the primary effort. So in other words, second and third squad, if something falls over with first, I'm expecting you to go and support them and ensure that that doesn't fall over. That is the most important thing that we need to accomplish. And by having those three pieces of information, what above wants, commander's intent, and then the mission, sprint goals, and then the who, they call it primary effort or supporting effort, then you know who can just drop what they're doing and then go support one another to ensure the most important things happen. And that cascades down to the squad leader, who then gives that same, a different, well, not the same five paragraph order, but a different order, but dissected at their level. Again, the why, what, and who.
I love it. I love it. It reminds me of other things that I've read and talked about. Again, I bring back David Marquet, the Turn the Ship Around. He's a Navy guy. I hope it's okay to bring him in with a Marine in the room. Is that okay? I'm not quite sure protocol here.
Exactly.
And I brought Air Force in before with the Blue Angels. Or are they Navy? I see. but Marquet talks about decentralized leadership on the same thing, right? You know what the intent is, the mission, and who's doing what. But he brings in another element that you have competence and clarity at the who level, or else as a leader, you're foolish in giving over control. And that was a big part of his self-learning as a leader back in the 1990s when he took control of his sub, which was the worst performing. He's like, yeah, I'm the problem. I can see that. I need to figure out how to delegate control to the people closest to the decision that needs to be made in the minute, without it going up and back. Oh, the situation's changed. Oh, I gotta go back up and down. So how at the in our work, whether it's teams of teams or at the org level, do we help confirm or reinforce the competence and clarity so that the giving over of control is not a scary thing that could be release you to the world of gainful employment, whatever level you're at.
Okay, yes, that's a great question. I mean, a few thoughts. Number one, you need your own version of an LRC. You put them in situations that are controlled where failure doesn't cost you much. And then you identify your competency. For example, for me, it was the interview process where I would see them operate in front of a team. Or even at the team level, one of the things I know I've often coached people about is this notion of, well, I want the team to be autonomous. And I'm like, well, they can't just get there automatically. What you do is you give them a small void. You go, here's a hole I need you to fill. And it's a hole that you're safe giving up. And then you see how they react. And then once they fill that void, you then give them another void and you continue to do so step by step by step. So how do you get there? How do you get to where, you know, you're okay with this uncertainty? It's a little at a time. And it's by doing things that are risky, but nobody's lives are on the line, the LRC. You're doing a thing, you're learning how things feel and how they hurt when it's safe, so that when you're on the battlefield and getting shot at, you know it's going to be okay because you trained harder than the battlefield's ever going to be. So it really is about accepting some amount of risk, knowing that here's a person who might be competent, giving them something to play with, allowing them to fail or succeed, and sometimes even giving them something that's a little too big for them, but still safe for them to explore. I know as a Marine, the thing I was often told was good initiative, bad judgment. And in other words, I'm glad you did something, and now I want you to learn from it, and I'm going to coach you in this moment and tell you why it was a bad decision.
I like that. But that requires so many conditions to be true. To have that conversation and to take that risk, you need to be in a very safe environment where you can extend yourself beyond your comfort zone to get into that area so that you are able to make a bad judgment. So many people say, yeah, the level of my initiative does not exceed my ability of certainty to do a slam dunk here, right? I'm not going to take the shot from 30 feet away. I'm going up to, you know, where I can make it 99% of the time. And that doesn't help in today's world of chaos, uncertainty, and changing conditions. Yeah, it's a huge stretch.
Yes, I agree with you. I have two thoughts that I guess are it's just slightly in disagreement with them. But yeah, I agree with everything that you're saying. Two things. Number one, something again that the Marine Corps taught me that I then found the words for when I was working on my MBA back at University of Nevada, Reno. A professor, Brett Simmons was his name. He said, an organization cannot empower you. You can only empower yourself.
Is there a corollary to that of an organization can certainly disempower you by policies, rules, procedures, punishments, pick any of the P's?
They can, but then you can choose to find other gainful employment. I mean, that's true. There are organizations that it's hard to do what I'm about to describe. Which is you have good initiative, but bad judgment, even if nobody's telling you that. But I also say as well, I know I have my own mechanism with when I screw things up. And it comes from a silly little parable from years ago. It was the story of this king told three wise men, I want you to make me something. That's going to remind me that everything's going to be okay. When I am successful, I need a thing that brings me back to center. When I am failing, when things are terrible, I need you to build me something that'll bring me back to center. And the three wise men sat down and they thought about it, and they gave the king a ring. And on that ring, it just said a very simple phrase, this too shall pass. And the idea is that when you are successful and you're crushing it, remember, it's not always going to be like this. So enjoy those moments. And when you're failing and when everything sucks and when you feel sorry for yourself, that's okay, because this too shall pass and you'll find your way back to center. I myself, out loud, as silly as it looks, when I'm in those moments, both of them, I say to myself, this too shall pass. And again, that's my trigger to either go, all right, sulk a little bit, or all right, milk this for what it's worth, because it's not going to be here as long as you might like.
I love that. And I think that's a wonderful way to wrap things up. Before I close out, is there anything else you want to drop in? Topic that we didn't cover, upcoming things?
Yeah. I know I have these three threads for this talk that I've been preparing. And there's been a fourth one that's been showing up for me lately. And I don't even know if I want to violate this notion of I've got three and I talk about the power of three. But there's another one that I've been toying with, the idea of the power of movement, that sometimes, even if you don't know what to do, it's more important that you just do something so that you can build some inertia, so that you can learn from it, and so that you can then pick the direction from there, even if the direction you started with was entirely wrong. And that notion came to me again from the LRC, this idea that if one of the leaders were given their instructions, saw their obstacles, went back to their group of five, and just stood there staring at the three boards and duct tape that they have and did nothing, that's even worse than giving some bad orders. And sometimes just the power of movement is enough to build a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of learning, a little bit of thought. So somewhere in either my three, or maybe this is a fourth, that story might show up.
I love it. I love it. The power of movement. It reminds me of, I think it was Martin Fowler. There are only two hard things in computer science: cache and validation, naming things, and off by one errors.
Yes.
So by all means, the power of three with an off by one error. Hallelujah. See if people notice it. Well, thank you, my friend, for this wonderful conversation. It has been a great start to my day. Thank you to our listening or viewing audience, whether you're got it in your ears or eyes or both. If you enjoyed this episode and you aren't subscribed, subscribe, whatever channel you're watching on, catch the next one in your feed. Also, give us a review, a rating. Leave comments. What did you think? If you'd like to join the conversation with us, look in the show notes, pop on over to our Discord server. We've got a couple hundred people around that campfire, and it's really such a range of voices, experiences across this wonderful blue marble that we live on. And finally, support from listeners just like you help us keep this going. Cover our podcast and hosting costs. See the show notes, click the Patreon link, and send some things our way. And at a certain level, we'll send some things back your way. Jay has a wonderful collection of swag, stickers. I don't know, Jay, do you have socks yet? Agile socks? At a certain contribution level, you'll get some stuff in the mail. Until next time, this is the Agile Podcast, signing out.